Now we have Bill Resnick and Elizabeth Teal talking about the Janus decision and what Portland public school teachers are up to these days.
Thank you, Denise. Elizabeth Teal, welcome to KABU.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Elizabeth Teal taught English and social studies at Portland Public School, middle and high schools for 14 years. Elizabeth is also a union activist on the legislative committee and the PAC, was very active in challenging high-stakes testing, and is now the vice president of the union, the Portland Association of Teachers. So, Elizabeth, 4 years ago, you were the organizer, the head organizer for the PAT at Madison High School. There's a head organizer in every school, I gather, is the
That's
way
right.
it works.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were many sort of shop stewards, too. You had a
one-in-ten
program.
Yep.
You really organized for that strike. The teachers were ready, and it paid off. In its wisdom, the board at the time, with a few conservative people on it, in its wisdom, they hired a very well-known, very aggressive union-busting law firm to run the negotiation. And the union busters began by offering a completely unacceptable contract with a list of 44 takebacks. Was it 44 or 42?
I don't remember, but that's the neighborhood, yeah.
Yes, it was completely unacceptable and an insult, actually, to teachers. Mm-hmm. But they thought they could just come in with that, and then you'd have to compromise if they put enough pressure on you, was the idea, I guess. Well, we only have to give back 10 things then
right.
of the 48, and then they called that a victory. Right. Well, the PAT decided not to go along with that system. They instead offered their contract proposal, which was as radical as the contract proposal by the union busters, but of course was very, very, very different. And it was centered around the idea of not wages and benefits so much, although they had to be preserved, but it really centered around how do we really improve the Portland schools? And then that became the rallying cry for the union mm-hmm. in all of the media, and you did a great job with media as well. I remember Gwen Sullivan being on the air all the time, who was the then president of the union, around the idea we want to bring to Portland the schools that Portland students deserve. And here is our plan for the schools, which included things like smaller class sizes, less administrators. What were some of the other contract proposals that were so appealing to people then, and that you fought for at that time, Elizabeth?
Yeah, well, part of our vision for the schools Portland students deserve was and still is full wraparound services for students to meet their needs, including counselors and social workers and academic supports, electives, including art and music and many other things available to all students, equity across the district. Right now, schools don't offer the same things in every neighborhood, and some students have access to a lot more than other students in their neighborhood schools. But we dug into a process that took us several years to envision what it is that we believe our public schools should and can be, and how can we use our contract to fight for those things and bringing us closer to that vision and eventually realizing it.
Yeah, and we'll get back to it. You really organized parents and talk to students. You did not organize students. When they came to you, however, you were perfectly free to talk about mm-hmm. what the issues were. It was really successful. Back, though, to the negotiations 4 years ago, they got very heated. The lawyers really dug in. They thought that they could break you, that ultimately these teachers are not going to be able to organize themselves and organize the community, and we can get the community on our side because we can break those teachers and their too high salaries, even though, of course, Portland salaries are below most of the suburbs now. The union busters thought, we'll just put them to the test. And, of course, finally, a day before the strike, the school board realized that this strike was popular in the city, that the parents were supporting the teachers, that the strike would hold, that you had made provision for parents to have daycare for their younger children in lieu of schools. You made provisions with the churches and other organizations. You were serving free lunch program, which is a major meal for a lot of kids in Portland, as it is around the United States, for the bottom 50% of people in the richest country in the world. The schools are the major feeding program for children. In any event, you made all those provisions so that the strike really didn't hurt people. The school board recognized that their union busters had miscalculated completely, and they gave up, basically. The union busting lawyers, who had a long contract, so they had to be paid, but they were taken off of the negotiation beat. The school board negotiated directly with the teachers, and you won. Many of your most important provisions survived. It was an amazing victory. And it happened, you know, at PSU, too, the same firm. Ultimately, yeah. The administration got rid of them, too, because the PSU teachers really organized so successfully. It was an amazing period, actually, in Portland. In any event, tell us about the contract that you won and the way you won it.
Well, I think that the whole process, it's a great example of why we need unions and why we need strong unions. Teachers were not willing to give up the things that help us to do our jobs for kids better. That includes protecting our workload, because workload means how many kids we serve, how many classes we teach, so that we can do those things well, not just do more things with less time and less energy. Teachers come into this profession because they want to be excellent teachers. They want to make a difference in students' lives. And our contract is one of the ways that we can preserve our ability to do the job that we came into this profession to do. And so one of the big things the district wanted to take away was language we have protecting our workload. And we were able to preserve it. We actually just negotiated a new contract this spring. It took us about 2 years of negotiation. It was excruciating to get there. And again, the district came with the intention of taking away our workload protection language.
Yeah, workload, it has a couple of meanings, and I think mm-hmm. we have to be more careful about
yeah.
it. You're working during the school year, and then in the summer, many teachers, because they have to make ends meet, they work 12-hour days, it seems to me. The workload on the teacher would remain the same, which the school board well knows. The workload would remain the same. The number of students, however, is the way they talk about workload, right? So they want you to serve 200 students rather than 140.
Right.
And that's what you meant. We want 140 students rather than 200.
Well, that's one of the big things. If you think about being an English teacher, as I am, if you have 140 students and you assign an essay, and then you bring it home that weekend to grade it because you don't have time to do it during the school day, that's 140 essays times 10 minutes. And if you do the math, that's an awful big chunk of your weekend. If you have 200 students,
It's impossible. To do a good, decent job.
Exactly.
And then you start assigning multiple choice tests.
Well, that's...
How do you protect yourself if you cannot really assign...
Yeah. Yeah.
Get kids to really think.
Mm-hmm.
Then you sort of grade them with these things that don't challenge them in the proper way and that don't really give you information and that create kids who then prepare for multiple choice tests rather than thinking how to think.
Right. And so we were really thinking about it in terms of making the day for students a better day. We don't want to just cram more in. We don't want to cram more students into classrooms. We don't want to cram more shallow content in. We want deep relationships with kids, deep exploration of content. And we know that's what a good education is. When people with means send their children to private schools, they know what a good education is. And it is not large class sizes and cramming test questions.
Can you imagine a elite private school or even the very well-funded public schools mm-hmm. in the suburbs around the country having 35 kids in a class? The parents would rebel. No one would send their kids mm-hmm. there. Right now, in the elite private schools, it's like 10 and 12 in the class.
Right.
They get all kinds of attention. They get support. And it's these same parents, of course, the hedge funders and the rest of them, the very, very rich, who send their kids to these extraordinarily good schools, actually, mm-hmm. who think that somehow for the other people, 40 people in a class is fine.
Right.
Cramming stuff down their throat and then forcing them to take multiple choice tests, that's all fine for them. They seem to think that that's what the little people need. It's a terrible sort of irony, but it's also outrageous and ugly.
It certainly belies the fact that's not based on a real desire to give kids the education they deserve. We believe that every student deserves to be known and valued for who they are and given the resources that they need, and not standardized to the point that if you don't fit the mold, you don't get to be valued.
Right. And for a lot of kids, they really do need a lot of support and attention.
Absolutely.
And especially middle schoolers and teenagers going through all kinds of troubles with identity and disappointments that they inevitably experience, it seems to me. And they look to their teachers. A supportive teacher can be an enormously important person in a student's life.
Absolutely.
But the teacher, when you have 200 or 300 students, many of them begging and needing attention, for teachers, it must be horribly difficult to...
Well, it is. And to meet those needs, those social, emotional needs that you're talking about, teachers create communities in their classroom, and they make time for kids to get to know each other and for the teacher to get to know them and to figure out ways to solve problems. It's one of the most amazing things about public schools is that there are these communities that would not form otherwise. And I know I value so much I have two kids of my own. They go to Vernon Elementary here in Portland Public. And the opportunities they have to struggle with all of the things we struggle with as people and communities, and then learn from their teachers how to negotiate those difficult situations and support each other and make your community stronger for it. Those things are just, they become near impossible to do when you are dealing with, say, 30 12-year-olds crammed into a small, hot room with no time to really listen to every individual voice.
Yeah. The fact is, the contract makes a difference.
It does.
The contract structures the way that the teacher... If you don't have a decent contract, in fact, you wind up not being able to teach. Elizabeth Deal, let me reintroduce you. You're a longtime teacher in Portland, obviously a wonderful teacher. You have another contract up and you're negotiating it now. It's become much more complicated now with the Janus decision, but of course you had a long time to prepare for Janus. It was obvious the conservative Supreme Court would upend all previous precedent and decide that they wanted to destroy unions, public unions in particular. Tell us about how you're preparing for Janus. It's really a task of organizing teachers is the first step.
Yeah. Well, first of all, just to clarify, we just negotiated the contract. We are not currently negotiating, but we will be back to the table sometime in the next year because it expires in June.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the Janus decision obviously is a huge attack on unions. And in order to deal with it, we're just going back to the way that unions were formed. It's about individuals reaching out to each other as a union, as people who support each other. A union is a community. And we have been putting a lot of effort for a long time, knowing Janus is coming, into making sure we are personally connecting with every one of our members through our rep structures. Every school elects their own union reps. And making sure that those reps are supported and reaching out to every person in their school and working on the problems that we face as educators in order to improve our schools and make sure it's a profession that, I think about younger teachers. I've been a teacher for 14 years and it's become a lot harder to be a teacher in that time. One of my goals is to make sure that teachers starting now want to stay in the profession for the next 25 to 30 years, that it's a sustainable profession so that they can gain the skills that you develop over time in really becoming a master teacher and putting those to work for our community. And we have to support teachers in order to keep them.
My sense is the PAT not only goes to teachers, it listens to teachers, it activates teachers, it helps people develop their skills, but also understand what's happening in the schools and then ask them. They become active players in decision-making.
Absolutely.
That seems to me central.
Yeah, we are a democratic organization, and it is our structure and our goal to make sure that, I mean, every teacher is a union member and is part of the process, and everything we do is based on what teachers are asking for and what teachers need. And it's not just teachers, we're counselors and media specialists and school psychologists, but we're educators in schools, and what educators need is what PAT acts on.
Elizabeth Teal, Vice President of the Portland Association of Teachers, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thanks for having me.